All right, welcome back. 239-1310. 239-1310. It's Afternoons with Amos. So, how many times over the years have people called this program and you've had a concern about a teacher at your kid's school or your grandkid's school, and you're saying, well, that teacher's not teaching my child anything, and I want to move him out of class, blah, 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 blah. Or you called and you said, hey, I got my kid's got the greatest teacher since sliced bread, or this school's got great teachers, and they ought to be lifted up, and we ought to pay them more, da, 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 da. One of the big arguments in education today, particularly among educational reformers, is how do we evaluate teachers? How do we do that fairly? How do we, you know, reward the teachers that are doing a fantastic job in their classrooms? How do we get teachers who aren't doing a good job and improve them, and those that are not doing a good job on a consistent basis? How do we encourage them to find other employment? So anyway, I guess in one of the last acts of the Tony Bennett years, and he was the one that said, you know, we got to reform teacher evaluations because 90% of the teachers are being considered as good teachers, and that doesn't make any sense. They convinced the legislature to create a law that required a formal evaluation of every licensed educator in the state. If you got a teaching license, whether you're teaching in a classroom or not, you are supposed to get evaluated, and then that data would be lumped together and distributed and published. Well, evidently, they published it this morning at 9 o'clock, and already the reactions are weird, because here's what came out. Out of 55,000 licensed teachers and educators in the state of Indiana, out of all but 66 of the school districts, and we'll explain why 66 of them didn't have to fill out the forms, does not include charter schools. We'll explain to you why they didn't have to fill this out. And this is for the 2012-2013 school year. Only 2% of those 55,000 teachers, 1,110, were evaluated, Charmaine, as needing improvement necessary. They evaluated 55,000 licensed educators. Only 1,100 needed improvement, 2%. Mm-hmm. Charmaine's eyebrow just went up. She's going, wait a minute, that don't, okay. 0.4%, 218, were evaluated as ineffective. Charmaine's going, that ain't passing your test with you, is it? No. Okay. 61.2% of Indiana's teachers, 33,909, were evaluated as effective. And another 26.4%, 14,658 teachers, were evaluated as highly effective. You put all that together, 7 out of every 8 teachers in Indiana were either effective or highly effective. And this includes teachers in schools that have gotten that F grade. Charmaine ain't buying that. A whole lot of people are not buying that. Scott Elliott has reported on education issues with the Indianapolis Star, with other newspapers across the country. He is head of Chalkbeat Indiana. That's a series of websites that covers education issues in 4 different states. He joins me live. Scott, people ain't buying this.
It's very interesting results. I can actually remember Tony Bennett saying back in his last year that his concern was that there was 99% of teachers being rated effective. That was a study that the State Department of Education had done.
Right.
And so it was 99%. Now, your numbers are correct. But there was one additional factor, which was about 10% of teachers were actually not rated because they didn't finish the school year, maternity maybe, or something like that. So when you take those out, it's actually more than 97% who were effective or highly effective. So Tony Bennett got, for all that change in the law, they got 1 percentage point gain.
Is this something where, and I know you've talked with some of the legislative leaders who put this law together, when they put this law together, the Republicans had the votes to put in a very strict evaluation policy. Why didn't it end up that way?
Well, it was an interesting an interesting sort of tension between a couple of Republican ideas. One is they wanted more accountability for teachers. That's what this was really about. Mm-hmm. But a lot of Republicans also like the idea, particularly in education, of allowing the local school and the local school district to control these kinds of processes. So there was an idea for a while that maybe they would require 50% of most teachers' evaluations to be based on how much their students' test scores grew. Mm-hmm. In the end, they backed off requiring that. Instead, they just used a more nebulous guide in which they said has to be a significant factor. So Representative Benning, who helped write this law, told me this morning, he thinks that most schools did more like 15 to 20%, and he's wondering if that's enough test scores.
On the other side of the coin, since this evaluated all licensed educators in a school district, so if the coach mm-hmm. of the football team is a licensed teacher, but maybe he's the football coach and the dean of students, he would be evaluated, and test scores wouldn't have anything to do with that. The same with counselors, the same with the art teacher or the French teacher. How then do you evaluate and make scores in a big part if that teacher doesn't have, isn't teaching students anything that requires them to be standardized tested?
That's a really interesting and hard question. And it's a problem because, you know, you only have testing in English and math at mm-hmm. grades 3 through 8 and then in algebra and English at grade 10. So that's a lot of subjects and a lot of grades where you don't have a lot of test data from the state level. So what most districts did, in most cases, you'd be surprised at how many different kinds of jobs, they were able to figure out some way to do, to include some testing data. Sometimes the district actually created their own sort of mini tests, say for art or for music. So they did make an effort to create some level of test data. It just wasn't the state test.
239-1310. 239-1310 this afternoon's name is. You may have a question about the school district your children go to or, the individual school. You want to know how many of them, this is from last school year, not this school year, you know, how many teachers were considered effective, ineffective, needs help, highly effective. 239-1310, 239-1310, this afternoon's name is with Scott Elliott. The bigot in other states that have these evaluation processes, what stands out for them? And are those working?
That's a great question. And in fact, just before I came in to get on the radio with you, I was tweeted at me by Jeff Solacek, who covers education in Florida, who pointed out that they had almost the same percentages in Florida. So this is a problem in other states. There's many states. There's more than 35 states now that are somewhere toward moving to create new statewide evaluation systems that generally include test scores. But there's still a lot of control at the local level. And, you know, what we're finding is we're getting kind of what we always got, which is, in general, teachers are rated as doing an effective job most of the time. And we're still seeing that in really high numbers.
Is part of the other problem that we really don't know how other industries evaluate their employees. So we don't know how broadcasters are evaluated. We don't know how firefighters and police officers are evaluated. We don't know how doctors and nurses and health professionals are evaluated. We don't know what the evaluation rubric is at Eli Lilly or FedEx. So you don't know whether, I'll use Lilly as an example, are 7 out of 8 Lilly employees considered effective and highly effective in their job, and maybe these numbers are the norm.
I think these numbers are probably not the norm. There is some amount of research out there about how other industries do this. Now, here's the tricky problem, though, is that employee evaluation has to be very specifically tailored to that job. You know, in every profession, because what you would expect of a salesperson, I know there are companies that do sales that will fire the bottom 10% mm-hmm. of their staff every year. Mm-hmm. That's just how they operate. Mm-hmm. Now, does that make sense in teaching or in journalism? Probably not. Does it make sense in sales? Apparently to some companies. So you have to be very specific to your industry when you think about how this should be done.
Is this also, because I was thinking about this earlier today, a teacher sometimes an employee doesn't know they're being evaluated because their supervisor is observing them on a daily or weekly basis. A teacher knows when that principal or the evaluator is coming in the room. All of a sudden, the principal comes in the room, sits in the back or sits kind of in the middle, and is observing. At that point, if you're a halfway decent teacher, you're going to recognize that and suddenly step up your game.
I've had many students tell me this, that they can tell when somebody's coming because the teacher, even in the days in advance, will sort of prepare the class for the fabulous lesson we're going to learn on the day that the observer is coming. Now, some districts do combat this by having some level of random observation. So, for instance, like Warren Township, I wrote about last year, they do lots of short evaluations. So they'll come in 5 or 10 minutes, like 10 times a year, a principal or another observer. So there are ways to sort of get around that problem, but it is an issue. And something like teaching, which is sort of an art, I mean, I think that there, it's very hard to quantify, to boil it down to numbers as to whether someone's doing a great job or a bad job. That's why you have to have a lot of measures.
The other thing is you can't compare the results from one school district to the other because they were doing different evaluation models.
Yeah.
And so I noticed when I looked at just the percentages of districts in terms of their percentage of effective teachers. And I looked and saw that Speedway had a low percentage of effective teachers, but they have obviously a higher percentage of highly effective teachers.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, IPS had a high percentage of effective teachers and a low percentage of highly effective.
Let me point a great example out that I discovered looking at the data. Crestview Elementary School in Lawrence Township, 40 educators on their staff, 5 of them were rated ineffective, okay? IPS, 2,600 employees were evaluated, 5 of them were found ineffective. See what I mean? Now, why is that? Because there are different approaches. Maybe they used a different system. Right. Maybe they had a different sort of philosophical approach to it. But this is a really tough problem in terms of comparing one school to another, as you're pointing out. Although I would suggest that that does raise a question as to whether they're being a little tough at Crestview or maybe being a little bit too easy at IPS.
239-1310, 239-1310. It's afternoon's news. Talking with Scott Elliott of Chalkbeat, Indiana. Let me go to the phones. And Lydia on line one. Hi there.
I have a question, Amos. I want the charter schools included.
That's a very good question, but that's one of them little perks. It's sneaky things in the law. Why weren't charters included in the original law? And I understand there was a companion law, and they will be included.
Yeah. So this was again sort of a conservative philosophical debate. One of the sort of conservative ideas behind charter schools is that they should be as much as possible released from regulation. That's sort of the theory of the market theory from some proponents of charter schools, is that if you take more regulation off them, they'll have the freedom to do better things. Now, this is a problem, though, for a lot of people when they want to see how do charter schools compare to other schools, and there's no data. So it was actually a very conservative Republican, Todd Houston, formerly chief of staff for Tony Bennett, whose bill passed this time that changed that. So with our next round of results, we will have charter information.
But there is data for the takeover schools, Emma Donnan and Howe and Manuel and Gary Roosevelt, and then Arlington is not a charter school, it's a takeover school. But there was no data from there, and I talked to my good friends over at EdPower, and they responded to me saying, here's their statement, the data referenced by the Department of Education is a report that charter schools are exempted from submitting and not typically part of our reporting cycle at Tinley. When we were asked to take on this important work, meaning, you know, dealing with Arlington, we were assured by the previous administration that we would be given charter-like operational flexibility in our management of Arlington High School. In our first operational year, the data and several other reporting requirements that apply to traditional public schools and school districts have been the source of continuous conversation between our office and the Department of Education. We had hoped that there might be some clarity offered in this legislative session, but that did not happen by the close of the session. Consequently, Tinley Schools accept the new mandate of the Department of Education and is submitting the Department of Education this data. At the requested department, I'm told that that data will be submitted to them by the end of the day. Of course, it may take the State Department of Education until Thanksgiving to release their data, but that's neither here nor there. Let me go to Buck on line two at 239-1310. Hi there.
Yeah, how you doing, Amos?
Hi.
I love your show.
Thank you.
Things you're doing. My thing is, you know, evaluating teachers, I'm just going to keep it real with you. I taught for 14 years, mm-hmm. you know, in the place where I taught at, so I'm not going to blast them like that, but, you know, they got to be fair, and they're going to be fair. And I coached, and I'm one of them coaches that they didn't give me the favoritism, but I'm thinking, I've seen coaches that's, you know, or people that they like, or who they, you know, they let them to their classes and just ran any way they want. Because they're more concerned about, you know, the sports and the teams, that kind of stuff, which is fine, but you still got to be fair across the board if you're going to be fair as far as evaluating teachers. But the biggest thing is, I'm thinking if everybody that haven't paid attention and noticed, you know, IPS is the only place where schools got took over. And there were some townships that I know personally was doing bad before a certain test at a certain time, but it's kind of like, you know, it's not exposed as much as it is about IPS schools. It's kind of like ever since they started busing, when I was a group of busing when they first started busing, ever since busing started, the IPS has been the one that's been up under the rug. It's kind of like we're trying to take it all from you mm-hmm. and give it all to the other township schools and just give them the money and stuff. And I'm thinking, you know, I enjoy being bused to the township, but I really would have rather went to IPS school. But now I'm seeing how they're treating IPS as far as with these tests. You know, that test was a test that nobody really wanted to pay attention to when the president was putting that stuff in effect. Now it's just hurting every school system versus IPS as far as that test and how you got to meet this and meet that. And it's just unfair.
When you were evaluated, who evaluated? Did you have a teaching license?
Yeah. Here's the thing. Something we said about that violation, I'm thinking, okay, I taught for 14 years. When I started getting evaluated was when they wanted to try to get rid of me.
Mm.
And I taught for 14 years. And the only reason why they wanted to get rid of me is because I wrote agreements with another teacher or head of the department. And I'm thinking, okay, we said about evaluation. I'm thinking, wait a minute, I worked 14 years. I got evaluated the first year and I was there the first 2 years teaching because they evaluate because that's part of the thing when you start teaching. But after that, I wasn't evaluated. When nobody came to my classroom. But when they wanted to try to get rid of me and start up and then try to find stuff, my friend said, I want to find out what's going on in the class. I said, my door is open. Come anytime you want to. You know what they told me? What? Well, you got to make an appointment for us to come. Wait a minute. I'm telling you, I'm not hiding nothing. Come when you want to. And they can take that. They're afraid of me.
Let me ask a question. Should if we're going to do evaluations, should people from IPS be the ones evaluating Pike? Should people from Pike be the ones evaluating Washington Township?
Exactly. It should be an agent because they feel entrusted. No, go to another system and let them evaluate. Because we have people in your system that evaluate you. It's kind of like your kids in your classroom. You know how your kids are. So if I'm going to evaluate my kids on what they're doing, if I like Johnny Ben, I like Susan, I'm going to go that way. Same way with teachers. You know, we're human. So why are you going to have a person evaluate a person who might not like them, even though they might be a good teacher? I'm not tooting my own horn. I was one of the best teachers ever at that school because who has kids that come to them and want to talk to them for 25, 30 minutes at the mall? Teacher talk to you 50, you know, so it's like how other people evaluate. People, they pick favorites.
All right, good point, my brother. 239-1310. 239-1310. Let me go to Dave on line 3. Hi there.
How you doing, Amos?
I'm fine, sir.
Interesting discussion you had today.
Yeah.
You know, I think all teachers should be evaluated on what they're able to accomplish with the students they have, and that should be across the board. If you're a teacher that's in a system that you really have a lot of good students, and they end up scoring really well on the test and the evaluation, that's great. And then if you have a teacher that has subpar students, but they improve a lot,
mm-hmm.
then you should have a very high rating. It's when you have, say, average students, and they fall below average on the testing at the end of the year, then you know you have a real problem with that teacher. Because those students should be at least average or maybe a little above average for that teacher to be recommended as excellent. You know, it has to be done on a fair basis. You can't take a teacher that has accelerated kids and compare them to a teacher that has underachieving children and expect them to have the same test scores. It's just, that's not going to happen. I don't care how great a teacher you are, they're not going to make up the difference in what they started with and what they ended up with. And by the way, the fire department, all firefighters are evaluated every year.
Mm.
And if you're a probationary firefighter, you're evaluated every month. So, your officer sits down and they fill it out and you can agree or disagree and then your chief, evaluates, the officer and he looks at all the evaluations that he's, commended under him.
Dave, let me ask you, based upon your experience as a firefighter, if the fire department was releasing data on whether a firefighter was highly effective, needs improvement, or ineffective, would those same high, would 7 out of 8 firefighters be effective and highly effective?
Amos, that's, it's a little subjective, but, you know, most of the firefighters I have run in with are really good guys, and they really try to do the very best they can.
Mm-hmm.
You only have a handful of individuals out there that are trying to take care of take advantage of the system and not pulling their weight. Everybody knows who they are.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need an evaluation sheet. They know. Believe me, the office knows, the chief knows, everybody knows. So that's not any big secret. Whether they would like to tell the public that or not, it's a different story. But they're certainly not going to come out and say that Joe Schmo over here is not doing his job. Well, it's that chief's responsibility to make sure that guy's doing his job. And I know a personal case where they called a new officer was coming to our station and they wanted to get somebody straightened out, and they got on him, and he said, hey, why didn't you handle this? Why do you want me to do it? You should have done it. You're trying to make me out of some kind of a ogre. If you guys would have taken care of the problem before I got there, I wouldn't have to do this.
Alright, good point.
But he's putting the problem out though.
Alright, good points, Dave. I appreciate it. 239-1310. 239-1310's after news name. Dave also brought up, Scott Elliott.
Mm-hmm.
In every school corporation that was evaluated, if they had a central office of 10 licensed educators or more, those educators were evaluated. There's no kid in a central office.
Yeah.
So why would that data even be included? That's the...
That does seem pretty weird. And I wanted to address something else that Dave said. So Dave talked about the difference in expectations depending on what sorts of kids you're teaching. And I just wanted to point to a couple schools in IPS's data that I found interesting. So you have the Seidner Gifted Academy. Right. Every single kid that goes to that school has tested
their
gifted.
Off the chain.
And then, I'm going to compare them to Ernie Pyle School 90. Ernie Pyle School 90 is also an A school, but 95% of the kids that go to that school are poor enough to qualify for free and reduced lunch. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So which teachers are doing a better job? According to the data, keep in mind, both these schools have very well-regarded principals, okay? So, but they clearly have different philosophical approach to rating. So Merle Seidner Gifted Academy rated 13 teachers highly effective. Ernie Pyle, the school with 95% free and reduced lunch, that's also an A, 0 highly affected teachers. Okay, they have almost the same number of teachers in the teaching staff.
So these are both IPS schools where the kids are knocking it out of the park in terms of doing a great job, great school, something to be proud of. But the Ernie Pyle, there are no effective teachers. Seem to me, highly effective teachers. Seem to me, if that school overachieves, every teacher should be highly effective.
I think the argument could be that, you know, if you're a school with 95% high poverty and they have everything, they've got special ed kids, they've got kids learning English as a second language, that school is very typical of a neighborhood school in IPS that has serious challenges. And they're above the state average on test scores, 4 straight years of growth, 4 straight years they've been an A. So that school is performing at an extraordinary level. You can make the argument there ought to be more highly effective teachers there if that kind of results are getting than the school that's got the gifted kids who are in the past?
Here's another one. School 70 had 36 educators reporting. School 74 had 34. School 70's been rated a D school. They only have one teacher that's highly effective, 35 that are effective.
Mm-hmm.
School 74 is an A school. One teacher, highly effective, 33 effective.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much the same numbers. And one's an A and one's a D.
That's within the same grading system or rating system.
Yeah.
239-1310. 239-1310. We're talking about teacher effectiveness data. It's the first time this data has been shown here in Indiana, 239-1310, there's also an evaluation going on over there. So we thought in terms of this subject that we'd have a little teacher evaluation going on in the studio. But see, Charmaine is highly effective.
She's doing a great job, I can tell.
This is taking the car out on the motor speedway today.
Yeah.
This is not like 465 at Rush Hour.
It feels like a race car in here.
239-1310. 239-1310 or send me an email at praiseindy.com or a text message at 37890. Tomorrow, Democratic candidates for 7th District Congress. This afternoon's with Amos after these. All right. 239-1310. 239-1310. This afternoon's with Amos. We're with Scott Elliott with Chalkbeat, Indiana. I just got a note from Stand for Children. Why am I not surprised that they're now saying teacher evaluation needs an overhaul? The data just got out at 9 o'clock this morning and everybody wants... It leaves me to wonder, what were people expecting if organizations like Stand for Children are saying, wait a minute, we don't know whether this works, and the legislators who pushed this legislation are now saying, oh, I don't know. What were they expecting?
Well, so, you know, I think I remember Tony Bennett saying when he was still in office, when they were working on this, that he thought a plausible number for ineffective teachers in the state was about 5% or mm-hmm. somewhere up to 5%. Mm-hmm. So if that's what they were expecting and what we got was a little bit under 0.5%, mm-hmm. you know, you're talking about a couple thousand teachers that are not being identified if that's what people thought should have been identified.
This is obviously one of a number of changes we put in the law. So here they put a law in, now they're seeing the consequences of it and they're going, well, wait a minute. Is this what's getting ready to happen again with, it's not Common Core, it's the Indiana career and something or other standards?
Yeah, with the new Indiana standards that we're trying to figure out just how Common Core like they're going to be. Mm-hmm. I do think that we're going to continue to have a very, what's unusual about that debate is we usually don't have such specific debates about standards, mm-hmm. right? I mean, normally people aren't in there saying the standard is good, the standard's bad. So I think that's going to go on. I think that's going to go on into the summer when they finally pass the thing and probably even afterward.
Do we need to be concerned that they're developing these standards, but there doesn't seem to be any plan as to how the standards are going to be phased in, when students would have to be tested on the new standards, and any kind of strategies to explain, not just to teachers, but to students and parents and the general community, what these standards actually are?
Well, that's a really good question. I think that hits the next big issue right on the head. I mean, I think we're probably a month or so away from the board approving the standards. And so then once that part of the debate is over, then the next question is that very question. And this, what we're talking about here today is perhaps a harbinger, right? I mean, one of the questions about why this didn't come out as some folks expected it to come out is probably implementation. You know, how well were the principals trained? How well were the teachers trained? How well did they know what to expect? You know, did they get it right? Those are sort of like questions that are being asked by folks who had different expectations today. I could absolutely imagine us being in that place with Common Core in a year or 2 years or whenever we think that we get this kind of results from Common Core.
Should this have been piloted? Should they have taken 30 school districts, a mix of different kind of school districts, and say, evaluate and then see how it worked?
Well, they did do that.
They
used about, I think it was 4 or 5 districts. Mm-hmm. I wrote about this last year for The Star. And by the way, The Star put that series back up online today. So if you go to Chalkbeat, Indiana, or look at my Twitter feed, you can click to it. Anyway, there was 4 or 5 districts that tried out a couple different models, the state model and a couple of national models. But the simple fact was they learned a little bit from that. Mm-hmm. But then 2 things happened. One is it's just hard to roll something out from 4 districts to 300.
Right.
That's problem number one. Problem number two is the people who were developing it were suddenly gone because Bennett was defeated, right? So
right.
I know that the folks that worked on teacher evaluation under Bennett, have a lot of frustration with how things went after they left. It's to be expected that Glenda Ritz went in a somewhat different direction in how she viewed how this should be implemented.
239-1310. Back to the phones and Miss B on line 3. Hi there.
How are you doing?
I'm fine.
I want to ask a question about this evaluation on the teachers.
Mm-hmm.
How do they do that? Because it seems like to me that Bennett's behind all this stuff, and they are doing this to do what they did before, is get rid of certain teachers, mostly black, so they can do what they want to do with IPS. I don't care whether they're evaluating any other teachers or not, but I think it's something to do with what they're getting ready to do to IPS again, because Bennett's back here in Indianapolis doing what he want to do.
Well, first of all, in terms of if people thought he was putting this in to get rid of teachers, the actual results are totally different, because when you go up to IPS, the total number of teachers who were rated as ineffective was 5.
Mm-hmm.
Out of 2,672.
Uh-huh.
So if you were trying to come up with a system to get rid of teachers, you would have had a whole lot more rated as ineffective than 5.
But I'm thinking if they're doing that now, the rating might change after they announce this, and then they'll change it the way they want it to, because they do a lot of stuff behind closed doors anymore, so we don't know what's going on.
That's an interesting point. That's an interesting point, Ms. B. I appreciate it. Let me go to thank you. Let me go to Anonymous at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
I just like to say about this whole education thing is,
yeah,
we're treating children like an assembly line. Assembly line is run by certain things. I know I raised 3 kids myself. I had one that was darn near a genius, one that was whatever. And I'm one in the middle. Well, the genius could go walk in and take a test, and he could read the book before he go in and take the test, mm-hmm, and pass it.
Right.
But guess who was the most successful? Well, I won't say he was the most successful, but who was completely successful was the one that was lower than the genius. Mm-hmm. He was more successful than the other one because he found something that he liked, and he had teachers who cared about him. Not so much the teachers that really picked him up. And I kind of call ourselves a pretty good family. And the teacher that helped him get over the hump was a teacher who wasn't even teaching him.
What was that teacher? There wasn't a classroom teacher? What was the teacher doing?
She was a classroom teacher, but she just picked up on him for some reason. I think family knew her or something.
Okay.
And she picked up on him, and she's the one that made him more successful than the other one.
Ah, so
all 3 kids are when you have 3 kids, you got 3 different kind of children.
Right.
And you got to face reality, and that's why we're handling all of them like they're all the same. You can't test all kids the same. Some kids can be tested and just go through a test like nobody's business. Other kids, when you start basing things on tests, I went to addicts, and addicts taught me how to survive. All those teachers taught me. So when I came out of addicts, I was ready to live.
Mm-hmm.
These kids are not coming out of school ready to live.
Yeah, good point. Where in evaluation does the extra credit count? In other words, the great example of teachers who go out of their way, as the caller said, that may maybe spot a kid and the potential in a kid and spend that extra time, or it's the counselor who spends that extra time unlocking something in a kid, or that coach who's still a licensed teacher. Where does that, in all of these evaluation models, there doesn't seem to be any place to fit that extra effort.
That's really tough to capture. I think the caller's right on the money on a couple things. A standardized test for a student captures a very narrow scope of intelligence. It certainly does measure a certain type of intelligence, but there's lots of types of intelligence out there, and there are kids who don't do well on standardized tests who are very bright and end up being very successful in life. And this is also true with teachers. I mean, there are teachers who do intangible things, that make them very successful teachers, and that may not always get captured in this kind of data. There's actually a great example in one of my stories today from Teresa Meredith, who's the president of the Indiana State Teachers
Association. Oh, yeah, they're happy today.
Yeah, well, she was not happy with her own rating. So she was a kindergarten teacher last year in Shelbyville,
mm-hmm,
and she wanted to be rated highly effective. She thought she was highly effective, and she was rated effective.
Mm-hmm.
And so she looked at her data and tried to understand why, and she noticed an interesting thing. She got knocked down from a 4 rating to a 3 for leadership. Now, the district's definition of leadership was any level of leadership in the teaching profession. Could be at the building, could be the school district, yeah. Could be in the state, could be national, right? So here's somebody who at the time was vice president of the statewide teachers association, also wrote grants for the school, did all this kind of stuff. Like, she really could not believe that that wasn't enough leadership to be rated a four. But so much of this is in the eye of the beholder. You know, from their point of view, was she doing enough, in that case, an intangible? It's hard to quantify that.
The other thing that the data does not show at a statewide level is it is not broken down by race. It would be difficult for Hispanic teachers because the numbers are so small, but there's enough African American to have the data to at least say, okay, is this 7 out of 8 teachers rated effective or highly effective? Is that mirrored among African American educators?
I think that would be important data for us to see. I certainly would like the state to put that out. I mean, you think about what we just discovered over the last month with regard to student discipline.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no logical reason why there'd be a big discrepancy between how African American children are disciplined and how non-African American children are disciplined in school, but we see it across the board. So knowing that happens in that circumstance, I think it's a fair question to ask in other circumstances.
We've got iRead probably coming, that data probably coming out next month, early, middle of next month. Superintendent Farabee, his reaction to these teacher evaluations was like, A, it wasn't me, and I wasn't in charge then, but also he's got concern about the disparities of high percentages of highly effective teachers in poor performing schools.
He does. He's pretty aligned with the critics of this, who you might think of as conservative, right? The conservative critics are saying, how can you have an F school that has very few ineffective teachers and mostly effective teachers? And Farabee has that very same question. Now, another interesting part of Farabee's view of this thing is he's very much interested in trying to redo the way this IPS evaluates, rewards, and pays teachers. And he would like to find a way to add performance pay for the highest rated teachers and also identify more teachers at the low end for additional professional development. So I think he's hoping to use this data as a lever in that debate with the union.
Now, there were 66 districts that did not provide data for 2012-2013. They included Franklin Township Schools, and they include, I think, Westfield, Washington, with the major schools in this area. And that was because they had teacher contracts.
Yeah, that was an interesting thing that happened. The way they wrote the law in 2011 was if you had a – so they were changing all kinds of stuff, both right. about the evaluation and about the way unions bargain their contracts. So because of the other law about unions, they said if you're under a contract right now that goes beyond this year, you can finish out your contract and then you can start addressing some of the new laws, rules with regard to union bargaining right. and teacher evaluation. So what did a couple districts do? They quickly passed long-term contracts, like 3 years or more. So there's just a small number. I mean, it's not that small. It's about 60 districts. So, you know, it's a quarter of the state. That's still under an old contract. They got maybe a year or two before they have to actually adopt all these practices. So those districts are not yet in the state data pool.
Going back on IPS and Dr. Farabee, is the iRead for his third graders, is that going to be the first test to see were some changes done in the poor performing IPS schools? Is that going to be the first indication?
Indication. Sort of like, are we seeing something different with Farabee? Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
I think it's probably too early to tell. You know, Farabee didn't actually start work until the end of September. Mm-hmm. So, he doesn't even have a full school year under his belt. But maybe, I mean, he certainly, I'll say this for Farabee, he has a very quickly identified schools that he wants to change and addressed it with a couple different actions. You know, in some cases, changing personnel, in some cases, flooding the zone with some support from the central office. So we may see some change in some of those places.
Larry will be our last caller with Scott Elliott of Chalkbeat, Indiana. Hi, Larry.
Hi, Amos.
Hi.
You know, it makes me sick every time you get somebody on there talking about, oh, our kids learn different. They might do this or different. They overlook scientific facts. There is no difference in the human intelligence in black and white. That's a scientific fact, first of all. And if they have a test, and it's given uniformly, formally, then every child has a chance to pass that test. So when they come on talking about our kids are inferior, that's their catchword now. They learn in a different way. So they're just trying to say that they're inferior beings, and I think that's what he's trying to get his point across. Because if they knew what was happening to public education in our school districts, our common schools, being destroyed because people won't adhere to scientific facts, they let their emotions and prejudice and hatred get in the way. And then we join in destroying our own kids and branding them as inferior because they can't learn to read or write.
All right. Larry, as always, we appreciate you. 239-1310, 239-1310, Scott Elliott. If you want to read about and find out about how what education is going on, not just here in Indianapolis, but all across Indiana, including the state, all but are they really running the Gary schools?
Boy, that's an interesting story.
The state is actually running, de facto running the Gary Public Schools?
It has been fascinating to watch what's going on up there. And there's some good reporting coming out of the two papers that cover that school district. But yeah, they, you know, increasingly they are playing a very big role in that. And that's maybe not something you would have predicted with Glenda Ritz.
No.
That she would be a type of superintendent that would go into a very troubled school district and try to play a very active role in managing turnaround.
Gee, what did Tony, what would Tony Bennett think about that? Scott Elliott with Chalkbeat Indiana. The website is in.chalkbeat.org. Thanks very much for being with us. Glad to have you.
Thank you. I'm always glad to be on.